That means the same rule applies to me as to others. And after all, my inclinations are often the reverse, right? I'd like to blame everybody else for the problems I have and not blame myself. I'd like to talk about what other people owe me, not what I owe them, right? And you can know what, you know what this is like when you have an immoral person, right? An immoral person is typically someone who acts as if the rule applies to everyone but themselves, right? Everyone else has to be honest. Everyone else has to keep their promises. Everyone else has to be nice to me, but I don't have to keep my promises. There's always an excuse for me, right? That's the essence of immorality for Kant, right? The essence of morality is this honesty, this deep honesty, this uprightness of saying the law applies to me, right? And there's a great deal of dignity in that, which we'll get back to. One of the implications then, the implication of this formulation of the categorical imperative is what I call, or actually Kant called it, the implication of autonomy. That means that we rational beings are autonomous. And that's a word which comes from a Greek word meaning self-legislation. Auto, self, nomos, law, right? To be autonomous means to be a law unto oneself. But notice now, this is a law that we legislate universally. So it means I legislate the law for myself precisely by saying the same law applies to me as to everyone else, right? So I'm autonomous. I legislate the moral law. Right? And it is I myself who legislate the moral law. Each one of us, as moral agents, legislates the moral law for ourselves. But we do it precisely by saying this law applies to me as well as to everyone else. It applies universally. So one way of talking about this particular formulation of the categorical imperative is to call it the formulation of universalization. Right? I have to be able to take this law that is going to guide my action and apply it to everyone, especially myself. Okay. That's one form of the categorical imperative. Here comes another form. It's called the formulation of respect. And it goes like this. Act so as to respect other persons as ends in themselves. Why should we do that? Well, other persons ought not to be used as means to satisfy your inclinations, but should be treated as rational beings who, just like you, are capable of legislating for themselves. Rational beings, human beings and angels, if there are any, but at any rate, the persons that we meet in our lives are rational beings, and that means they can act according to the moral law. And I should treat them as ends rather than means. They can't be tools, or at least it's immoral to treat them as tools. It's immoral to use people, right? I must treat them as people who are the source of the moral law. And therefore, there's what I call the implication of dignity. And again, dignity is Kant's term. Rational beings have no price. They're beyond price. They have a priceless dignity, right? There's no way of evaluating their value. Their value is beyond all means-end calculations. They are ends in themselves. They have this dignity. And I must act so as to respect that dignity, to respect their freedom, to respect their ability to choose, to respect their responsibility. I have to respect all those things about other persons. And therefore treat them as I would want to be treated. Okay, so these two formulations of the categorical imperative are related to each other closely in that way. To respect another person is precisely to treat them the way I would want myself to be treated when I'm respecting myself as someone who legislates the moral law to myself. Third form of the categorical imperative. Third formulation. Act so as to promote a kingdom of ends, in which all rational beings are respected as ends in themselves. This is sort of a social formulation of the categorical imperative. The idea is when I'm acting morally, I am acting so as to promote this situation called the kingdom of ends where everyone treats each other with mutual respect. That's not the way things are now, right? Nowadays, indeed, for all of human history, human beings have used one another, treated each other with violence and disrespect. But I should act in such a way as to treat other people with disrespect, treat other people with respect, and indeed promote a social world where everyone treats everyone else with respect. Perhaps I will educate people to respect other people, for instance. That would promote a kingdom of ends. So, why would I do this? Why should I do this? Why ought I do this? Because, you see, here's the issue. Even though this kingdom cannot exist in the world of nature, it's the goal towards which our moral actions tend, right? we cannot ever see, we will not ever see in our experience, this kingdom of ends where everyone respects each other. Right? That's not going to happen. That's, as they say, unrealistic. It's, as they say, idealistic. And yet that's where our moral actions are tending towards. That's where our moral actions are going for. That's what we should aim for with our moral actions in the social world.